Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this part of the show, we'll be talking about lung health and lung disease, and our guest is Dr. Maury Topolowski. He's a pulmonologist. He's a physician who specializes in dealing with the lungs. He works at Christie Clinic, and he's been good enough to come spend some time with us to answer questions. From time to time on the program, we do general kind of healthcare shows, but we also do talk with people who specialize in dealing with particular parts of the body, and that is what we are doing here this morning. And I'm sure that he would do his best to answer questions that you might have about lung disease and lung problems. Now, whenever we have a physician on the program, also, though, one of the things that I say right at the beginning of the program is that I hope that callers will understand that we cannot do diagnosis over the phone. Okay. We do these programs to add to your store of health knowledge, and I'm sure that the doctor could answer a range of basic questions. But, two, we want you to know that if it comes down to the point where someone's going to have to see you, you're going to have to go see a physician who actually can see you. But also, having said all that, I don't want to discourage anybody from calling. Calls are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And whether people have questions about asthma, lung cancer, emphysema, those are all of the things that he works with in his practice. And I know he will do his best to help you out. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Particularly when, just as a general question, particularly for lung problems that might have a trigger, something that has to do with air quality, you know, stuff that's in people's homes, stuff that's out in the air where they walk around. I'm just curious when you look at things like asthma, for example, or perhaps also emphysema, is there a trend? Do you see more of it now than when you started in your practice?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a trend. Everything seems to be getting worse. The number of severe asthmatics are increasing. The age at which people are having more asthma is getting younger and younger, more and more patients all the time. And, of course, the epidemic caused by smoking abuse is now reaching an absolute crushing number of patients, as smokers have been smoking 50, 60 years now, and they're starting to see all the ill effects of that with chronic bronchitis and emphysema and lung cancer. It just seems to be a major epidemic.
Well, I'm sure if one asked the question, you know, what could you do to try to make sure that your lungs would be healthy, I'm sure that the number one thing that you would say was don't smoke.
Exactly.
Having said that, if there are these other problems that seem to be getting worse and that they generally have to do with air quality, I don't know that that's the kind of thing that you have a whole lot of control over. Is there anything that one can do?
Well, we do have a considerable amount of control over it. For instance, we know now that secondhand smoke is just as bad as primary smoking. That can be avoided if it's not avoided by, you know, public decrees of not smoking. It certainly can be avoided by an individual taking the initiative to not have secondhand smoke. What we're seeing, and this is just absolutely tragic, is I'm seeing women in their 70s and 80s now who have been exposed to a smoker in their house for 50 years. They're coming down with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or lung cancer. So the secondhand smoke looks just as bad as the primary smoking for those kind of diseases. Exposure of children to the smoking is certainly causing them to have a lot more trouble as they grow up. I think a lot of the asthmatics are now presenting earlier because secondhand smoke. I'm seeing people who never had asthma that now they're 30 and 40, and they were exposed to parents' secondhand smoke until they were like 19 or 20, 20 years of exposure, and now they're having trouble. As far as the air quality in general, the only thing you can really control is maybe your house and possibly your workspace. Air filters are good, but you have to change the filters. You can't just leave them in there. Some of these ionic filters where they have a little electric charge that comes through the air and gets the stuff out of the air, those are really good. Your working space, I mean, just, you know, cut down the amount of dust there, you know, clean up. Don't leave things hanging around that have dust all over them. if there is ventilation, make sure you use it. Don't turn it off. I mean, a lot of us work in very closed spaces, so it's kind of hard to keep yourself away from all those things. Another big, and this is really interesting, is airplanes. You're trapped in a space with hundreds of other people breathing the same air, and you know they do try, and they try very hard to filter the air, but I imagine everybody is concerned about that guy who had tuberculosis that was trapped on an airplane with all these other people and what happened to those people, and I'm sure that's a major concern. We might talk about that later if someone asks a question, but I just think that you ought to do real good, if you're on an airplane, real good hand washing if you go anyplace, like to the bathroom or anything. Good hand washing. Your space in the plane, I would either bring your own pillows or some kind of little cover to put on the pillows that they give you because you don't know if they're clean or not. Okay. I would just general health. If you're on a plane for more than an hour, you probably ought to get up and walk around just to get your legs straightened out and stretched a little and blood clots and all that stuff. But, you know, just be aware. Just be aware of your surroundings and do what you need to try and keep yourself healthy. Other things include making sure you're eating and sleeping correctly. If you're tired, you're more likely to get some kind of lung infection. If your nutrition's not good, you might be more likely to get some kind of lung infection. So just paying attention to normal things, getting the right amount of fluids, getting the right amount of food, getting the right amount of rest will help your body fend off a lot of these things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a couple of callers here who would like to talk with you. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We're talking this morning about lung health and lung disease. Our guest is Maury Topolowski. He's a pulmonologist at Christie Clinic. 333-WILL, toll free, 800-222-WILL. And we have several people here ready to go. We'll start with someone in Champaign. This is line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I just have a general question about pneumonia because I had a friend who was seemingly healthy, young, athletic, and all that stuff, and she regularly exercised and ate well and all that, but she got pneumonia that got her down. She had to be hospitalized even, and I just wondered about what, I know it's a virus of some bacteria of some kind, but other than that, I really didn't know a lot about pneumonia. So if you could just talk generally about that, I'll hang up and listen.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Well, pneumonia, by definition, is an infection of the lung tissue. You know, bronchitis is infection of the airways, the bronchi, and pneumonia is infection of the lung tissue itself. And it can be caused by a virus or a bacteria or an atypical bacteria like tuberculosis and a lot of other things. So why does someone get pneumonia and another person doesn't get pneumonia? Okay, one factor is the dose one gets of whatever it is that causes the pneumonia. I mean, there's got to be a critical threshold of when your body can't fend it off. Okay, so you have to have a significant amount of contamination occur to you. And as I was discussing earlier, if you're not in the best health, i.e. you're run down, you're dehydrated, your food isn't good, you will be more likely to get something, even with less of a dose than someone who was in good health would have before they got sick. So it's an infection of the lung tissue. And the viral infections, there's not a whole lot we can do with those. Those usually run their course. The problem with viral infections is once the lung is damaged, it's much more susceptible to getting a bacterial infection on top of it. So that's called a bacterial superinfection. So you get a virus infection, your body deals with that, but now you're weak and you get a bacterial infection. And that happens a lot in the elderly. Young people, they tend to get viral infections, and they think they have bronchitis most of the time, and they don't really even know they have pneumonia. And it goes away on its own. When someone really gets sick, though, sick enough to go to the doctor, short of breath, coughing, bringing up phlegm, that's usually bacterial pneumonia. And again, it kind of depends on the dose you got of that and what your susceptibility is to it. And those are usually treated with antibiotics and do well.
Well, I hope that helps if the caller wants to follow up. She certainly can. I guess I think of pneumonia as something that proceeds from something else. That is, you're already sick. I would be surprised me if someone would appear to be completely healthy. You ask them how you're feeling. They're feeling fine. They're not feeling any symptoms. And then suddenly, the next thing you know, they have pneumonia. Can it actually work like that?
That's the way it usually works.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Usually, someone gets sick. They're well, and then they get sick, yeah, and they have pneumonia. Yeah. Now, if you've got underlying lung disease like emphysema, chronic bronchitis, asthma, you might be more susceptible to getting pneumonia. The pneumonias that people get, quote, when they're already sick, are usually hospital-acquired pneumonias. They're sick. They're in the hospital with something else, and they get a pneumonia. Now, those people are usually not in the best health. They're either they've had a heart attack, they've had surgery, they've had a stroke. And now those people in the hospital, they're not up and around like they ought to be. They're not eating like they ought to eat. Their immune system's down, and they can get infected with a bacteria. And usually if they did not have a pneumonia when they came in the hospital, and then they get a pneumonia while in the hospital, we actually call it a hospital-acquired pneumonia, which is much more significantly severe than what we call community-acquired pneumonia. Community-acquired pneumonia, by the way, is probably the most common form of pneumonia, not these other things. But community-acquired pneumonias are, most of the time, can be treated as an outpatient with oral medicines. If they're very severe, of course, they get admitted to the hospital. Hospital-acquired pneumonias are significantly worse than a community-acquired.
And what are your main symptoms of pneumonia, those things that would give you a tip-off that something was going on?
Well, just malaise, you know, just feeling lousy, fatigue, shortness of breath, cough, fever, bringing up discolored sputum. Those would all be symptoms of having an infection in your lung.
Uh-huh. Next caller is in Champaign also. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I have two questions. The first one is, statistically, I know you cannot diagnose my situation, but statistically, if I have been an on and off smoker for 40 years and then have stopped smoking totally for the last 18, how likely are my lungs to be recovered?
Okay, that's an interesting question. We know pretty well that if someone is smoking and stops smoking in their 30s, maybe even their early 40s, they will have a significant improvement, and their breathing tests may even come back to pretty much normal if they stop smoking. So what the problem is that causes most of the problem is a chronic bronchitis. The airways get irritated, chronically irritated. They kind of protect themselves by making more mucus. In fact, the mucus cells in the airways are hypertrophied, overgrown in people who have chronic bronchitis. So you get all this mucus that you have to deal with, which leads to possible increasing infections and chronic inflammation, and that causes scarring, and that causes destruction of the lung tissue. Actual destruction is the emphysema part. The bronchitis is an airways disease. So people who have chronic bronchitis, usually they stop smoking, the irritation's gone, the airways can remodel themselves and get pretty much back to normal if you've quit, you know, when you're in your 30s or early 40s. After that, it's kind of like the more damage you've got, the less chance you have of getting a complete recovery. But anytime you stop smoking, even if you've been smoking 60 years, the inflammation will improve because you're not continuously irritating things. And, you know, it's not something that everybody does the same thing. I mean, you and I both know people who have smoked two packs a day for 100 years and there's not a darn thing wrong with them. They're just lucky. Other people have smoked a pack a day for 20 years and they're in terrible shape. So it's not like a dose related. It's kind of like a dose plus the recipient's, you know, response to the dose. So in general, if someone stops smoking in their 30s, they probably can recover their lung function pretty much. And then after that, it's kind of like, well, your lungs are malfunctioning and you may get some back, but not all of it back.
Well, I did do one of those blow in a tube lung tests. And I was amazed at how little lung power I had because even as a smoker, I had tremendous lung power. And so I wonder two things. Are there breathing exercises that one can do? And if there are, where would I find such description of exercises?
Okay. Everybody's lung function deteriorates as a process of aging. Everybody. What you can blow out in the first second, the FEV1, what you force out the first second, that's kind of a rough indication of your lung function, deteriorates as a function of age. The problem is, as we get older, we do less, we're less active, and even though our lung function's deteriorating, we don't seem to notice it because we're not trying to do stuff we did when we were 40, when we're 90, you know? But a smoker, that FEV1 deteriorates at a much faster rate than normal. So they do get to the point where their lung function is not as good as their body requires, and they are having shortness of breath when they try and do things. You can't really fix that. You can stop the bronchitis like we discussed before, but you can't fix how the FEV1 goes down. But
what is
FEV1? Forced expiratory volume in 1 second. That's the first 1 second of that blowing test you were talking about. Okay, so, but we can get people to be able to function better with what they've got. We've got all kinds of exercises, and that would be in what we call a pulmonary rehabilitation program, which your doctor can order for you.
If I'm not having asthmatic symptoms or bronchitis or pneumonia.
If you have a history of smoking and you have an abnormal pulmonary function test, yes, you can have pulmonary rehabilitation.
On the threshold of normal. It was just the very first part. You know, it's a long tube, and I only filled up, you know, maybe one-tenth of it, if that much.
I think you probably ought to see your physician and get a formal breathing test, the whole thing, and see what your function's like, and if you're a candidate for pulmonary rehabilitation. Now, this is a rehab services that's done as an outpatient.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on what your function is, I mean, you only may need to be there 4 to 6 weeks. They'll get you an exercise program. They'll tell you what to do, and then, you know, you're on your own. Other people continue to go for longer periods of time, kind of depending on what they need. But there's good programs at both Carl and Provena, mm-hmm. pulmonary rehabilitation programs.
Well, this has been very informative. I thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for the call. We have one more person here in line, and that is also someone in Champaign. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this is just a short comment going back to the earlier comments about airplanes. I have a problem in that I have an asthmatic reaction sometimes to people wearing perfume. And it's just, I just sort of wanted to make the comment for people who might be listening that this is a source of intentional air pollution that people create, and it sometimes causes problems for other people. I have no choice who I'm going to sit next to, whether they're wearing perfume or not. All I have a choice to do is to bring my inhaler or not. So that was really just all I wanted to bring up.
Okay. You would say to people, if you're going to get on a plane, go easy on the perfume.
Please don't wear it at all.
Okay. Please don't wear it at all. Very good. All
Thank
right.
You.
Thank you. I don't know. You want to comment on that at all?
Well, strong odors often trigger asthma in patients. And, you know, all you can do is hope people are courteous.
Yeah. All right. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Maury Topolowski. He is a pulmonologist. He's a doctor who specializes in dealing with the lung. And if you have questions about lung health or lung disease, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I don't know if this was what the earlier caller had in mind, but I'm sure that there are people who do have a question like this, someone who smoked for a period of time and then quit. And I'm sure you would say, good, that is a good thing. But now they want to know, okay, based on the amount of time that I smoked, what are my risks for lung cancer? Is that something where you can actually say something, or does it go back to what you said before about how, well, it just, every person is going to be different, and you can't, it's difficult to say, okay, if you smoked for 5 years, this is your chance. You smoked for 10 years, this is your chance. You smoked for 20 years, this is your chance.
Well, unfortunately, there probably is some kind of dose response that people have. But again, different hosts, we'll call them hosts, the person who's smoking. The host has his own immune system, has his own way, his or her way, of dealing with these things that cause the irritation. And some people are better at it than others. Like we've all known people who smoke two packs a day forever and nothing happens to them. And again, we've seen people who smoked a pack a day for 10 years and they have lung cancer. So it's the host's own system has a lot to do with it. There really isn't, it's not a dose. I can't give you a dose. It all depends on, you know, maybe people, some people inhale more than other people. It's just a variable thing. But being exposed to it, that's a risk. Now, we do know some things. We know that people who are exposed to asbestos and who have asbestos changes in their chest x-rays, we know that a non-smoker, as opposed to a smoker who has asbestos, the smoker probably has a 50-time chance of developing a lung cancer than a non-smoker that was exposed to asbestos. We know that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, there's no dose of cigarettes, for instance, you know, that I can tell you what would be a safe dose, because it's totally based on the patient and what else is going on with that patient. I mean, what else is going on? Is that patient's immune system impaired? Are they a diabetic? Do they have vascular disease? Do they have other things that might weaken their immune system? So it's kind of a, since it is a hit or miss type thing, the best thing to do is miss the exposure and you'll be happier.
All right. Let's talk with someone else, another Champagne caller. This is line one. Hello.
I'm just wondering how your breathing changes with age. I'm 55 years of age and seem to experience more dryness and hoarseness now. I'm not a smoker. I'm just wondering if how aging affects it, how stress affects your breathing, and third, if the statin drugs have a dehydrating effect that might produce this response that I'm experiencing.
Well, as you age, your mucous membranes become a little thinner. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, as you age, you are more prone to breathe with your mouth instead of your nose. So the air is not warmed and humidified as much as it is. If you breathe through your nose, it's warmed and humidified a lot more than if you breathe through your mouth. So it's, the drier, cooler air is hitting your airways, which are irritating for some people. Your total lung function deteriorates as you get older, which is normal, and that could be causing some of your problems. The other thing is, you know, what's going on in your house? I mean, is your house dry? Do you have humidification in your house?
I don't think so, because I mean, I was hoping for that throughout the winter, but then it persisted when it started raining and into the summer season, so I don't think it is. I experience it as if I'm living in this Sahara Desert, but I don't think that's the case.
The statin drugs, I don't believe, cause any kind of respiratory problems.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's talk with someone in Chicago. And this is line number four.
Thank
Hello.
You. I'd like to draw a correlation between the environmental considerations that are being talked about throughout the world this week, as well as in the past, and in the future. When we see the impact of the pollution in the air, and of course the chemical damage to the water and the soil with the chemicals that are and other pesticides and herbicides that are going in there, it's no wonder that we're getting an untold number of reactions, whether it's digestive or pulmonary and so forth. And I think that when we see the burden on the healthcare system as a result of the environmental impact that's occurring, that's being imposed as a result of our neglect of the proper pollution controls and so forth, I think that the burden for the healthcare system ought to be more shared by the profit-taking upper echelons, you might say. As a result, they're indirectly with our business expansion and economic growth causing the healthcare problems that we're visiting. What do you think about
I think you ought to run for public office. I mean, what you're saying is true. I mean, we're having more things that are affecting everybody's breathing. How to deal with them, you know, remains to be figured out. I know here in Champaign, I don't know if you've been watching the news, that they did have a referendum and they decided not to allow smoking in restaurants.
Yeah, that's going to be something popular everywhere.
Yes.
Well, and also the state legislature in the state of Illinois has essentially passed the thing. So it's going to be the entire state beginning in the beginning of next year.
And, however, the bigger pollution problems, like for instance, I understand in Beijing, China, people are virtually walking around continuously with a face mask. And every so often we hear clouds of dust, whatever material is floating across the ocean right into our own continent. So we have this environmental impact that's really probably causing a greater health problem, and those that are profiting from the neglect of pollution controls and the continued abandoning, like in China, coal-powered plants and so forth. I think the profit ought to be paying for a little bit more of the health care than it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just I want to go just for a second back to something that a question that came up in my mind with the earlier caller, and talk a little bit about hydration and whether we're all told or we have been told that we probably don't drink as much water as we should, and it particularly can be a problem when the air is so dry in the winter. And, of course, this one of the standard pieces of advice people have when they have a cold is drink plenty of fluids. Just in general terms, is there some relationship between lung health and hydration?
Well, I mean, it's very important that the air that gets into our lungs is warmed and humidified. Now, this is kind of a different way to think about things, but your lungs really aren't on the inside of your body. They're on the outside of your body. They're exposed to the environment, just like your skin is. You know, they're inside our bodies, but they're sitting there being exposed to the environment. There's no other organ in the body that's exposed to the environment like this. You know, your heart's not exposed to the air. Your kidneys aren't exposed to the air. They're totally safe with inside our body. But here your lungs are interfacing with the environment. And the natural way to protect them is, number one, you got all those little hairs in your nose. And you have all these little hairs all through your respiratory tract called cilia. Which are trying to protect them, and you have mucus, which tries to trap things before it gets into your airways. So the mucus needs to be moist so that the cilia, the little hairs, can work. So you have to drink lots of water to keep everything working the way it's supposed to be working. But I think you have to realize your lungs are really in total exposure to the environment.
Yeah, okay. Next, we'll talk with someone in Sycamore up in northern Illinois. This is line number one. Hello.
Yeah. Good morning. Mm-hmm. I've always had a kind of a post-nasal drip situation where when I wake up in the morning, I usually have to clear my throat and get some stuff out. And then through the day, periodically, I tend to clear my throat a lot, or need to clear it a lot more than a lot of other people. And I've been a milk drinker all my life. I'm almost 60 years old now and just never got off of it, weaned off of the stuff. And people have said that that's part of the reason for that. And I've never smoked, but I'm wondering, since I do have this increase in mucus, if that's going to be a problem in old age.
I don't think so. It sounds like that's an upper airway problem, not a lower airway problem. The other diseases we were talking about are definitely lower airways and lungs. Sounds like you have a nose and sinus trouble, which probably you would benefit from maybe seeing an ear, nose, and throat doctor or internal medicine doctor to deal with the secretions. It sounds like stuff from above is coming down and causing the problem rather than there being a problem down below in your lungs.
Yeah, and that's definitely the case.
Right, and the milk, I think you should continue to drink milk. It's good for your bones.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Others are welcome. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Maury Topolowski. He's a pulmonologist. He specializes in dealing with the lungs. He works at Christie Clinic. And if you have questions about lung health, lung disease, one way or another, give us a call. I know he'll do his best to answer your question. 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Just, I thought maybe it might be interesting to have you talk just a little bit more about asthma, just because it seems like it is a fairly common problem. It is something that seems to be growing. As we talked about before, some people would think that it has something to do with air quality issues. And I think it is the case, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that we are seeing more children who have it. Just give us the basic thumbnail sketch on asthma.
Well, asthma is an inflammatory lung disease. It's because of inflammation of the airways, which causes spasms, and that's what causes the wheezing. The narrowing of the airways and trying to move the air in and out of narrowed airways causes the wheezing. Now, why people get asthma? Well, a lot of them are predisposed to it. They just have whatever the genetic makeup that makes their airways more, shall we say, twitchy than normal, more likely to respond violently to a stimulus than someone who doesn't have asthma. Why do people have that? Well, part of it's genetic. I mean, we know it's genetic, and part of it maybe some kind of infection like RSV that the child has when he's an infant, which makes the airways more reactive than normal. But the main treatment for asthma in the past has been bronchodilators. While you're wheezing, you're having constriction, here's a bronchodilator. And that's well and good, but we know now that it's an inflammatory disease. So people ought to be on anti-inflammatory medications to stop the chronic underlying problem. And those are inhaled steroids, which are not absorbed into the body unless you abuse them. But at the doses that are recommended, it stays in the lung. It causes decreased inflammation in the airways. And then, of course, steroids, which we don't like to give children steroids. We try and avoid steroids, but if they're really, really, really severe, we may have to put them on steroids. And then there's a whole new set of medications called leukotriene inhibitors, which act on the inflammatory response, and you may have heard of them. They're advertised all the time, Singulair. Those have really proven to be a boon to the treatment of asthma. So you got inhaled steroids, you got the leukotriene inhibitors, you got oral steroids. That all cuts down the inflammation. And of course, you still need bronchodilators, and most people use some kind of albuterol bronchodilator, but there's other kinds as well. But people need to figure out what triggers their asthma, stay away from it, and they need to treat it fast, because if you're starting to get out of control, the best thing to do is get in control, because the longer you're out of control, longer it takes you to get back into control. And people who are using a beta agonist, the usual inhaler, albuterol, more than two or three times a week, they probably should be talking to a doctor to get some better control.
Yeah, and I think having talked with people about this in the past, I think the message they wanted to get out was that there are good treatments available now for people with asthma, and that it can really make it possible for people who have asthma to live as normal a life as possible. They can participate in sports, they can do physical fitness, that they don't have to lead a sheltered life because they have asthma.
Right, and the other important thing is that, as you know, when you have chronic inflammation, it's eventually going to cause scarring. So it's very important to stop that inflammation so that the scarring doesn't proceed that would cause a permanent problem. Because asthma, by definition, is reversible airways obstruction.
Okay.
And as opposed to emphysema and chronic bronchitis, which is not reversible.
Some of the most common triggers for asthma attack are, well, I know smoke certainly is one.
Well, any inhalant irritant.
Okay.
And then there's ones that are allergic, all the pollens and that kind of thing. Cat danders, other animal danders, dust mite. Dust mite's huge. And there's no way to get rid of dust mites in your house. No, just no way. I mean, you can minimize things as much as possible. Hardwood floors, get rid of rugs, get rid of pets. But you know, you just can't get rid of these little things because they're just part of the environment. But a lot of people are allergic to that. So with the advent of the leukotriene inhibitors, that has been huge. And allergy testing and shots are still important. Not quite as much as they used to be since we've got the leukotriene inhibitors, but some people need those in addition to.
Yeah. And for people who, for children who have asthma, what are the chances are that they're going to outgrow it? I'm sure that's a question a lot of parents ask.
Well, you don't, quote, outgrow asthma. You may have less severe asthma, especially if you treat it. If it goes untreated for long periods of time, adults may have continuous problem. They may either even have, you know, permanent problems, but untreated asthma is the major cause of children who grow up to be adult asthmatics. Again, it's one of those things, you may be in remission, but you're not cured from it, and you could get it back.
All right. Let's talk with somebody else here. We have a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Yes. My question is, once upon a time, a lung x-ray was a routine part of a yearly checkup, and this is no longer the case, and I was wondering why, and I'll take the answer off the air. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. Is that the case, that it once was routine to give everybody, when they're doing periodic checkup, take a picture of the lungs, and now we're not doing it anymore?
I think if someone's a smoker, they probably need a chest x-ray every year. If someone's got some abnormalities on their chest x-ray that we've seen, they probably need an x-ray every year. If they've got some kind of disease like tuberculosis or a fungus disease or something like that that's been treated, they probably need an x-ray every year. People probably ought to get x-ray sometime. Around 50, just to see what their baseline is, and if anything's abnormal, proceed. But I don't think it's been shown to be cost-effective to do yearly x-rays, because most of the time there isn't anything that's on them, unless you have some kind of underlying problem.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a matter of somebody decided that exposure wasn't, the x-ray exposure was a problem, or it's just a matter of if you take a picture of everybody every year, you're going to have lots and lots of pictures, but you're not going to find
right.
that many problems.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, if somebody has a problem, of course you get an x-ray.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone's coming to you with cough, sputum production, I've already had antibiotics, I'm not getting better, of course you get an x-ray.
Yeah.
But again, if someone's a chronic smoker or chronic exposure to something, those people need x-rays, because we know that may be effective in finding something early. But otherwise, no.
All right. Other questions are certainly welcome. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Want to talk a little bit about emphysema?
Sure.
And again, just give us the basics on the problem.
Okay. Emphysema is actual destroyed lung tissue, usually caused by chronic bronchitis. Occasionally, you can have emphysema that it's genetic. There is a condition called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, where the patient does not have alpha-1 antitrypsin. This is an enzyme that protects us. Every time something gets into your lung, your body tries to get rid of it. It has an inflammatory response. White cells go in there. They spew out all kinds of lethal chemicals to destroy whatever it is that's in our lung and get rid of it. But we make stuff called alpha-1 antitrypsin that protects us from our cells eating ourselves, basically. Mm-hmm. And there is a congenital defect where someone doesn't have alpha-1 antitrypsin, they're deficient, and they can get emphysema at a very early age, very, very early age, and very severe. Okay, but that's rare. The rest of the emphysema by far is caused by smoking abuse. And what happens is you get the chronic bronchitis. The bronchi are irritated. They're infected. The area in the lung that's draining those areas gets infected. And slowly but surely over time, you have actual destruction of the stretchiness of the lung, the elastic recoil of the lung, because of all the inflammation and the damage. When you get enough of this destruction, the airways and the little alveolar sacs aren't stretching anymore, and they just kind of become larger and larger sacs that are ineffective. So that's emphysema. It's destroyed lung tissue. You've lost the lung architecture, and it's not fixable. It's not repairable.
Under what circumstances can lung tissue repair itself? Are there some cases where there are conditions that result in damage to the lung and that it can grow back? Maybe that's not the right term. It can renew itself.
Well, if you have an infection like pneumonia, where the lung tissue itself is infected, but it's not getting destroyed, I mean, that should look pretty normal after the pneumonia is gone. Mm. May have a little scarring in there, but not a lot. A bronchitis that's treated, you know, probably shows no damage. But emphysema is chronic damage. It's absolute destruction of lung tissue, and it's never going to come back.
All right. We certainly have time for other questions. Our guest in this part of the show is Dr. Maury Topolowski. He is a pulmonologist. He's a doctor who specializes in the lungs, dealing with the lungs. So if you have questions about lung disease, lung health, you can give us a call. He works over at Christie Clinic. Our number here, 333-9455. And we also do have that toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Well, something I thought we would talk about, I'm sort of surprised no one has asked any questions, but it would probably be good for us to talk a little bit about tuberculosis, just because this has particularly been in the news, because we've had this story about this particular individual with a resistant form of the disease, and, you know, there have been questions about his traveling and what he did. I know that you can't speak specifically to that particular case, but I'm sure that it has caused a lot of people to think about tuberculosis, how common it is, the likelihood that you might brush up against someone who has it, how infectious it is. Maybe you could, again, just give us the basics about on TB.
Well, tuberculosis is a pretty bad disease. It's a very old disease. We've known about it for a long time. In the United States, we've had a public health department that's been very effective for many, many, many years in making sure that everybody who has TB is known and the status of their disease is known. Most of the tuberculosis in the United States, I'm saying most of it, is actually probable reinfection tuberculosis. It's someone who had been exposed to tuberculosis a long time ago, and they get older, their immune system starts to deteriorate, they may have diabetes, and this tuberculosis reoccurs. So it's a reactivation tuberculosis. And those are usually older patients. Primary tuberculosis we're seeing now may be mostly brought in from overseas. We have a huge number of foreign nationals in the United States, a huge number. Now, all the foreign nationals who come to the University of Illinois, they're screened at McKinley. They're getting TB skin tests, and anybody who's positive, they're being sent to infectious disease or pulmonary doctors. TB is probably not contagious if the patient is not actively ill, coughing up all kinds of things. If they don't have a cough, there's very little way they're going to transmit it to someone because it's an airborne disease. They have to get globules in the air with TB organisms that someone else inhales. So if they're not really coughing a lot, they're probably not infective to someone else. This gentleman with the multidrug-resistant tuberculosis apparently was not having that kind of problem. I mean, I don't know for sure. So there's a little likelihood that he was infectious. He's got a bad disease, and we are seeing more and more drug-resistant tuberculosis all the time. But it does usually respond to multiple drugs, if you can find the right combination of drugs. Most of the TB is easily treatable with two or three drugs, and the treatment is a long treatment. It's like 9 months to a year, depending on what exactly the organism is and what it's sensitive to. And then there's another set of organisms called atypical TBs. They have the same kind of cellular configuration of a regular TB, but these are usually found in older people, and they're not contagious.
We have a couple of callers here. We'll try to get them both. Next is someone who is listening in, Muhammad, line two. Hello.
Hi, I just tuned in, so pardon me if I'm asking something redundant, but I have a twin, 4 years old, and just wanted to know if you had any guiding points here. She's had difficulty. She was about a month early. Did go into preterm labor, and we had the shots to make sure that the lungs were correct, or, you know, formed when they were born, and she didn't have any apparent problem, didn't spend any time in the NICU. But since then, she has exhibited lots of lung difficulty. She's had pneumonia a couple times, bronchitis. 2 weeks ago, we found her in her room with some, you know, like discolored lips, difficulty breathing, and rushed her to the ER. They said it was the croup, but it disappeared the next day. it seems like a lot of different things, and I don't know if that sparks something in your head that might point to something that we need to have tested.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you have a kid that's got a lot of respiratory problems at a young age, so definitely you're thinking about asthma. I mean, is she seeing a pediatrician? I mean, is it the same pediatrician? I mean, is it pretty well documented that she's had this, then this, then this, and this? You said she's about four, is that right?
Right, and they've been somewhat sporadic over the last, 2 years, but this last event, I mean, her lips were like, little bluish, and we do have a take-home inhaler, but we don't have, a home nebulizer or anything like that. It's just stuff that we've gotten from the ER, so we haven't seen anybody that's a specific, physician for this.
I think you need to see a good pediatrician and have the whole case put out in front of that person who's got time to look at it and decide whether you need to see a pulmonary specialist or not.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. And to someone here on a cell phone, this is line 3. Hello.
Hello. About 25 years ago, my husband was working on a job, and he found out he'd been exposed to asbestos as he removed material from a building. And ever since then, he's gotten a yearly radiograph of his chest, and so far everything's fine. Is this something he's going to have to do for the rest of his life, get the yearly radiograph of his lungs?
Well, the thing with asbestos is nobody's going to know what's going to happen with him. First, we know that asbestos-related disease is definitely correlated with the amount of exposure. Okay, so I have no idea how much exposure he has, but there's asbestosis, which is when you have lung disease. You can see it on the chest x-ray. There's asbestos-related lung abnormalities, which don't really cause medical problems, but you can see them on an x-ray, like calcium on the diaphragm or on the chest wall. And then if he has asbestosis, if he's smoking, he's at very high risk for developing a lung cancer. If he's not a smoker, he doesn't have that higher risk of developing lung cancer. But he probably ought to be watched. There are some asbestos-related malignancies, as you well know from watching TV, mesothelioma, which, he probably needs to be screened frequently. But I don't know how much dose he had.
They just told him there was asbestos in the material he was removing, and they were involved in it for several months, like maybe 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, that's not a huge asbestos exposure, but it's a significant one. He should be checked frequently.
Well, he gets his yearly chest radiographs. He just wondered if he still had to do that since it's been 25 years.
Probably.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. We had somebody who I guess was interested just in anything, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, but I guess anything general you might want to say on air filters for the home, whether you said earlier that you thought actually that they did work, although there may be some things that they can't. And then you also said your dust mites, you almost can't do anything about them. Is there anything in general that you could say about air filters for the home?
Well, I think if you're going to have them, you need to cut down the amount of things that are going to go through them. You know, if you have shag carpeting every place, it's a lost cause. If you have drapes everywhere, just tons of dust hidden in the drapes, I don't know, it doesn't matter what kind of filter you have, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the main thing is to get down the load of stuff in the air. So that means you got to change your furnace filters frequently. You should clean out your ducts in the furnace. You should minimize the amount of dust you have in your house, i.e. carpet, drapes, anything where dust can collect. And unfortunately, if you open your windows, you're subjecting yourself to all the stuff from outside. And it's nice to open the windows at night. It feels great. It smells good. But, you're getting your house all full of stuff that whatever filters you have are going to have to get rid of it again. So
it sounds like, yes, they do work, but you have to consider the total environment and other opportunities to trap dust and to create the problem that you're trying to filter out in the first place.
Yes.
Okay. Any last sort of thing that you might want to say? I'm sure that you would want to say, as we said at the beginning, that if there's one thing that you want to do to try to maintain healthy lungs is don't smoke and do your best not to be around anybody else who is smoking.
Right, and just take care of yourself. I mean, the lungs are the only lungs you get. I mean, they're yours, and you got to take care of them. And stop putting things in them that are bad.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying before. I think it was really interesting, your comment, and I guess I never really thought that much about it, that your lungs, the other systems of the body are closed.
Right.
They're closed to the outside. But the lung is about the one thing, maybe the only thing that's not, because
that's right.
You do directly breathe in whatever's in the outside.
Exactly.
You're going to breathe it in.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I appreciate it very much, you giving us some of your time. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our guest is Dr. Maury Topolowski. He's a pulmonologist. He's a doctor who specializes in lungs, and he works over at Christie Clinic.